our personal adventures before and after. That's chapter one, Bill's story, and the stories in the back of the book. So it's the whole book. Have been designed to sell you. Remember, he was a salesman, okay? Three pertinent ideas. A, that you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. Step one. B, that probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. Step two. And C, that God can and will. Finish up of step two. Now, it says, if you are not convinced of these vital issues, remember we established what vital is, a matter of life and death, you ought to reread book to this point or else throw it away. Perfect, okay. So you can see from the original manuscript after 44 times, it was a set of directions, not suggestions, okay? You can see that it is to the singular alcoholic, you. And third, you can see that he spent the doctor's opinion and the first four chapters of what alcoholism is and isn't, and without a power greater than ourselves, we can't survive. It's so important that we understand that and see that. And by the way, the guys that I sponsor in here, everybody, 2017 is the time. And I'm looking around the room. Everybody's going to be upstairs or somewhere on our knees. We're going to be doing the third step, and we're going to be doing the deal. And then after that, we're going to be writing. So nobody knows that there's not a surprise around the corner. Even if we did it last year or the year before, that was last year. I can't live on yesterday's score of yesterday's game. 2017, new game. So guess what? We're going to be in the game together. So footnote for you guys and you other ones, you want to probably run away. So anyhow, this is where we're at. Yeah, I can hear a collective. My ears are not that good. So anyhow, okay. So now, obviously you can see the difference in up to this point in time. It's clear. All the information for step one and two are where? They're in the doctor's opinion in the first four chapters. And yes, we are going to do, I was accused that, well, you told me we'd be going from the cover page 164 reading every word. We are going to do the original how it works next week out of there, and we'll break that down too. So you're not going to catch me on that one. But anyhow, listen to what it says. It says, being convinced in this book or being sold of what? We're convinced of one and two. Because if I'm not convinced, then I can't go on with three. Impossible to start at three. So many times we tell them, go to how it works. Can't be done. I can't do three if I don't have one and two behind me. So I am convinced of one and two, which are the doctor's opinion and the first four chapters. I get it. And once again, you don't work them, you take them, okay? And especially one and two, they are conclusions of the mind that we draw based on the information on the doctor's opinion, first four chapters, the forewords, the prefix, everything that goes along. In other words, I've always been powerless over alcohol, and my life's been unmanageable because of that. I just didn't know that. We're always the last ones to find out, right? Okay? And the reason I didn't know it and get it is until after the pain and misery of alcohol and alcoholism, and then because of this information in the book, From the Head to the Heart. So I get it. In other words, I didn't know that until I read the doctor's opinion of force for chapters, impossible to get it. There's always been a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. Either I didn't believe in that power or wouldn't let that power restore me to sanity. I didn't understand what insanity was. I thought I did, but obviously I didn't. So therefore, I suffered from that until, yes, read the doctor's opinion in the first four chapters. We talked about it, so read the book. Either you're going to read it or you're going to die. If you're real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So now that I've read and have this information, reached two conclusions. I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable. Oh, step one. I've come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, or step two. So being convinced or sold of these steps, I am now finally ready for three. So we can't we can see the doctor's opinion, first four chapters fit exact sequence where they need to be. Once again, can't start with three until I have one or two behind. So it's easy to see that Bill wanted these as directions, not suggestions. Once again, he used the word you 10 times in that. Like I said, once this happened, here's what they told Bill. They said, you can't give directions, Bill. They're going to cut and run every time. You've got to change it. They said, where you say you must, you got to soften that up because nobody's going to buy into it. They said, where you say complete and all, it sounds like the Oxford Group absolutes. They told Bill, you're going to change it. Do something about it. And Bill, you know what he said? I'm not going to change it. And he said, oh, yes, you are. It's our book, too. He said, no, I'm not. These words came to me after prayer and meditation. You know what they said? We don't give a damn where they came from. You're going to change those words. And the fight was on. It had almost destroyed this book in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill later on said, I wasn't the author of this book. I was an umpire. And the fight was on. But Bill recognized, he knew, sooner or later, he would have to concede and make these concessions on what we have and how it works. It's just our history. And I'm not saying anything more than that. And here's how it came about. Non-alcoholic psychiatrist suggested to Bill, why don't you change the directions, the suggestions, change the use, the we, then change the must to ought to, and maybe they would be more receptive. With these changes, you answer it. Who knows? Instead of 2 million members, would there be 10 million? Or would there be 10,000? Or would there be none? I don't know. Ask God when you get there, okay? Bill made these compromises. But he also made a deal with them kind of too. He said, I'll go ahead and do it. But one or two things. You guys, if you want to do this, then you finish the rest of it. And I'll make my suggestions. Or let me be the main thing of this. And you can make a few suggestions. And I'll do it. Now, they didn't want him to do it, but they wanted to do it less than them, so they reluctantly kind of gave in. And you can see 2 pages later, he's right back to it. He does the word directions and must, and it's just a beautiful thing. So if we didn't have this part of it, it eludes a little bit of the continuity of the book. Like he said, he felt like an umpire, not an author. So, as we have it right now, with the original manuscript, breaking it up, now we know how it works. You can see once again, it was meant for a set of directions, singular to the alcoholic. And like I said, once we got this point in time, we agreed that we are powerless over alcohol, our life's unmanageable, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The next thing we have to do is make a decision about that. Are we going to let that power do that? Or we have another choice. We're going to keep running the shows ourselves. Now we're ready to look at step 3. It's absolutely fascinating how he does it. So we will do on 60 after that. Okay. Now, it says being convinced, page 60 after the third pertinent idea. Being convinced of what? We talked about that. Being convinced of step 1 or 2. It says we were at step 3. Doesn't say we're taking it. I'm going to call what I call pre-step steps. There's a lot of things that I do, have to do, follow directions in here before we take step 3. It says being convinced we were at step 3. Okay? Which is that we decided, we talked about that, to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. That's why we did all those directions before. Just what do we mean by that and just what we're going to do? Okay. Obviously, and it says, obviously, we were being convinced. The first 2 steps, or ABC's, the doctor's opinion, we were at step 3. Given a lot of short instructions are given them. Once again, called the pre-step steps. Okay. Now, here's what it says. The first requirement. Number 1. You might want to write that down first. Number 1. Requirement! That means you have to. It's not an option. Okay? Is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. I'm going to break that down further from painful experiences. Any part of self-will. Don't make the mistake that I did when I first tried to do this. made a decision to turn my alcohol over to God. I said, stay out of my sex life. I can do that. Don't dare mess with my money. I'll run that too. Thank you very much. And so on and so forth. And guess what? Whatever you give to God, he's going to take. And what you don't, he ain't. And guess what? God don't even want the alcohol because he don't drink. He wants me. He wants all of me. So what is this thing called self? And it was absolutely fascinating because I thought I knew that what that was. And I'm going to go further than Webster's with that. We're going to do what Bill gave us in this. I can't make a decision to turn something over. I don't know what is. And when I found out what constituted self and what made up self-will, it absolutely blew my mind as much or more about the allergy of the body, the mental obsession, the spiritual malady. It goes on and on and on in the textbook. So we're getting ready to make a decision to turn our will, our thinking, our life, our action to the care and direction of God as we understand him. We need to look at some words very, very, very carefully. Okay? Now, obviously, first is that decision. I hear people all the time, 5 years, 10, 15, 30, 40 years of sobriety, say, my life is screwed up and I don't know why. I said, oh, really? And they go, yeah, I turned my will and my life over to God in step three. I said, no, you didn't. Not at all. You made a decision. You decided to. Decision implies there's going to be action. Dangerous concept coming up, but truth and painful as it be. All action is born in thought or decision. I'm going to say that again. All action is born in thought and decision. Here's our frogs. We got it. And that old thing, and they tricked me when the fog was still in there. They said, you have three frogs on a log. One of them decides to jump. How many are left? Well, I was pretty smart. I got out my smartphone and I did it. And they said, two. And they said, no. Three. All he did was decide, but he didn't take any action on it. So they tricked me. So obviously, we find out later on, fully relying on God, forever relying on God, says later on, step three will have little permanent effect unless at once, followed by a strenuous course of action. Not thinking, not talking, not reading, and we know that's steps 4 through 11. So once again, the word is will. And we talked about that, no more than you're thinking, no more than in your mind, what tells you what to do, what not to do, and most importantly, this word direct and control. And here's the key about that direct and control. As far as we know, there's only two species on earth that is faced with this decision, to run on self-will or to run on God's will. Very interesting. And the reason that we know that is they don't have jails for animals. They don't have psych ward for animals. They don't have treatment centers for animals. I'm starting to get it. Everything they do is followed on God's will. It's perfect for the most part. Obviously, you have your glitches in nature and in the animal kingdom. But they're not running on self. Well, that sounds kind of boring, don't it? Who doesn't want to get locked up now and then? Anyhow, today would be a good example of this. I never saw a tree hit a car except in a windstorm. But I've seen a lot of cars hit a lot of trees, and I've done that. Other species, everything they do is based on God's will or direction, control and direction. There's only two wills in life. Just look outside and in here. Either it's God's will or it's man's will. Remember, God gave us the ability to be the dominating species on this earth. It's either man's will or God's will. Look outside. Trees, sky, moon, sun, grass, yada, yada. We all know that's God's will. Man's will, this door, this frog, this, see what I'm saying? To control and direct. So we've got two choices. Either God's going to run the show or the great I am, self, is going to run the show. At any given time, we humans can make a decision to operate on those two things. And believe me, it comes back. We have two novel concepts. We have self-will. We have God's will, and we'll talk about it later on, a thing called free will. I hate when that happens. Okay, anyhow, we humans are the only species faced with that. Once again, the will is the last testimony and thinking, will thinking mind all mean the same? So, the life is, and believe it or not, much to everybody's dismay, life is no more than my actions. Right here, right now, as of this moment, all of us is the sum accumulated total of all of our actions taken in a lifetime. Make me what I am right here, right now, who I am. Remember, all action is born in thought. All of it. There's no such thing, well, other than reflex. If you got that, something's coming at your eye and you reflex it like that. But all action is born in thought. I cannot pick up a drink unless I say to hand, pick up, grasp, put up, swallow. All action is born in thought, good or bad, whatever it is. Okay, so now, if my thinking or my will is okay, then chances are my decisions are going to be okay. And guess what? My actions will be okay. And guess what? Life is beautiful. But the opposite is true, too. If my thinking is lousy or my will, so will my decisions, my actions, and my life's going to be lousy, too. Here's what it boils down to. So simple. I speak for myself. I've always been selfish, self-centered, self-willed, ran my life. I didn't give a damn about you, about God, or anybody, or anything. It was my show, and you were my monkeys, right? We talked about that. Never paid attention to God's will or your will or anything like that. Always wanted to do what I wanted to do, and to hell with you, and if you didn't like it, too bad. And guess what happened? I crashed and burned at 32 years old, but the saddest thing about it is I made a lot of people's life a miserable hell because of self, okay? So just think, if God can direct my thinking will get better, my decisions will get better, my actions will get better, then my life will get better. But most importantly, so will the people be around me. It's not about me. We find out it's about thee, meaning Almighty God and my fellow man, the spirituality that we're talking about of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we're trying to find a way to live sober, peaceful, happy, and free. Left on self-will, don't stand a chance. You always do the same things. You always get what you always got. I'll remain restless, irritable, discontent. I'll remain full of fear, guilt, shame, and remorse. I'll keep hurting people. In other words, once again, if I always do what I always did, I'll always get what I always got. Sooner or later, under those conditions, remember the three doors. Drink, do the deal, blow my brains out. I am not going to live in sobriety or untreated alcoholism. Something's going to give, okay? So it's my decision to make. Quit running the show myself. And the book tells us how it works. I just told you how it works. Now the book is going to tell us why it doesn't work. The first requirement that any life run on self can hardly be a success. Self-will can hardly be a success because on that basis we're always in collision, almost always with somebody or something. So what is the famous self and self-will? You guys ain't going to have to worry about your exercises, are you? Okay. Really, really important about self. Bill, when he wrote the big book, obviously, we got it, went to print April 10th, 1939. He wrote this 12 and 12 later on. Bill had a lot of help, if you will, because he was schooled and had mentored and had a lot of more experience and learned a lot about human beings. He wrote this 13 years after he wrote the big book. He knew a lot about more about alcoholism, about human nature, studied and worked with some of the best minds, and obviously, don't forget when he wrote the big book, night school lawyer, 3 years sober, he did the best he could with what he did. But I found information in this book, which is on the sheet, conference approved, that is absolutely invaluable for me to do this step and then do the fourth step, which will contain the rest of the program. So I need to see what gives me difficulty, why I need to do something about self-will, need to see what self-will is, the instincts, understand how they drive and dominate us. And then I can see the reason why I need to make this decision. Remember, we're not reformed alcoholics, we're informed. At the same time, like I said, I'll get the information to be able to go on step four so we see this. These basic instincts which make up of self, obviously, are God-given and they're necessary for the survival of human race. therefore they're good. If it's God-given, therefore it is good. These instincts aren't bad. None of them. The excess, or how we go about fulfilling them, and that's where we run into problem. So let's see what it says real quick. It's imperative. Please make sure you have this, because you need this for the rest of the book here. Itself. This is absolutely, like I said, one of the most important sheets you can get. Social instinct. Left side. Companionship, wanting to belong, be accepted. Self-esteem, what I think of myself, what others think of me. Prestige, wanting to be recognized or accepted as a leader. Pride, excessive, unjustified opinion of oneself, either positive or negative. Self-love, self-hate. Personal relationships or relations with other human beings in the world about us, and our ambitions, plans to gain and accept power and prestige, especially in the future. So, social instinct, whether you like it or not, all human beings are born with the desire to be liked, accepted, respected, come together in groups of other human beings. You may kid yourself, you may say, I'm a loner, I don't need it, whatever. It's social instinct, we got to have it. If we didn't have that desire, if we cared nothing about each other, there would be no society at all, complete anarchy, dog-eat-dog, and the world sooner or later and the human race would fail to survive. Believe it or not, we need each other. And that ain't being codependent either, whatever the hell that is, anyhow. So, I need to find out if that's a social, if that's a God-given instinct, which it is. I need to find out where we're living. What does the world want from me to fulfill these instincts? Based on what I determine that is, it teaches me to set up goals for myself. When we reach the goals, obviously, we have to make sacrifices. Nothing is free in this world. To achieve these goals will give us rewards. Here's what happens. You set a goal, you get it. You set another one, you keep getting it. New goals, new rewards, so on and so forth. For us alcoholics, I know you can't believe this, it seems to create an insatiable desire for more recognition, acceptance, power, etc., etc. But here's where the trap is. That's setting a trap, and here's where you get into it. We perceive we're not getting it fast enough. They're not giving it to us the way they should or the amount, so on and so forth. And here's where I step into the trap, and it goes off. I start taking shortcuts, start lying, conning, manipulating, stepping on toes, climbing on backs, and the instant I do, it creates pain and suffering for you. And you retaliate, and that creates pain and suffering for me. So remember what the book said. It's plain to see that any life run on success or run on self can hardly be a success because we're always in collision with somebody or something. The very same thing that God gave us for our survival is the very things left on ourselves that destroy us running on self-will. Absolutely fascinating. So that's group number one. Number two, security instinct. Material, and we all know what that is, buildings, properties, clothing, etc. Emotional security, based on our needs for others, people, or persons, and we tend to dominate or overly dependent on others in our ambitions or plans to gain material wealth, dominate or depend on others. I know that. Security instinct. Like I said, don't forget God-given, therefore good. All of us are born with a desire to be secure right now and in the future. If we weren't, guess what? If we didn't have no concern about the future, we wouldn't provide food, clothing, shelter. None of us would have savings, 401k, paying in Social Security. It's a natural thing to be secure in the future. Obviously, if we didn't, then we would freeze. There would be a drought. We wouldn't have anything to eat, and so on and so forth, and obviously about our future retirement, so on and so forth. The need, now we need, like the other instinct, is to determine what do we need to be secure in the future. That's for you to decide. Based on what society tells us, what we need, we set goals, work, and sacrifice. Once again, we wouldn't do that unless there would be a reward. Like the social instinct, the reward is that great feeling. But once again, it's an insatiable desire for more and more. Never seems to be enough. We set new goals, work for them, sacrifice, achieve, and keep going on and on. Once again, it creates something we just can never get enough of. What do we do? This trap is set on this one again. And this is how I've said it. I perceive they're not giving it to me fast enough. They're not giving it to me in the amount the way they should, when they should, and so on and so forth. What do? I shortcut, I steal, I lie, I con, I manipulate, I screw you is what I do. And the instant that I do that, the instant, it creates pain and suffering for others. They retaliate, which in turn creates pain and suffering for me. So once again, it's plain to see any life run on self. These three, okay, can hardly be a success because I'm always in collision with somebody or something. The very thing that God gave us necessary for our survival is the very thing that destroys us left on self-will. Last instinct is a sex instinct. Everybody loves to talk about that. The acceptable. Our sex lives is accepted by society, God's principle, our own principles. The hidden. Our sex lives that are contrary to either society, God's principles, our own principles. And our ambitions, our plans regarding our sex lives, either acceptable or hidden. Now, we all like to talk about it, all like to laugh about it, all like to joke about it, probably because most of us don't know a whole lot about it, and then for a lot of us, we ain't getting enough, so we joke about it, okay? Trying to keep it light here, come on now, just relax, okay? The sex instinct, remember God-given, therefore good. It's a good thing mommy and daddy had a glitter in their eye or a glimmer in their eye that night, or else you wouldn't be here, neither would I. Sex instincts. Believe it or not, all humans are born with a desire to have sex. It may be turned off by bad teachings, bad happenings, but we're all born with a desire to have sex. If we did not have sex, we could not reproduce ourselves, and the human race would fail to survive. God-given, therefore good. All these instincts, God-given, therefore good. Now, if you're going to reproduce yourself, just like the other two instincts, you're going to have to work for it, boys. Okay, I'll tell you that. You may have to sacrifice, too. The work isn't the sex act. It's getting there. Come on, y'all. You know what I'm talking about. That's a lot of work, a lot of money sometimes, too. Come on, y'all. Okay. But like the other instincts, there is a reward. And I'm going to go ahead and explain it to you. You might want to write this down. The reward, the great feeling, both physically, emotionally, upon completion. And spiritually, if it's good enough. Come on, y'all. Okay. Okay. And somebody came up and said, you know what? That may be the closest thing that an alcoholic ever has to a spiritual experience. I said, no. We're going to change this. Anyhow, just like the other two instincts, there is only a temporary feeling of the reward. No sooner than you're done doing it, you start thinking about doing it again. Okay. And here's where it starts. The trap gets sprung on this. Then you start thinking about doing it in different ways. Start thinking about doing it with different people, different times, different places. And it seems to create an insatiable desire for more and more with different ways, different times, different people, and different places. Now, the next thing that you know, much to your surprise, we're doing it with the wrong people, wrong ways, wrong times, wrong places. And the instant we do, it creates pain and suffering for somebody else. And in return, they create pain and suffering for us instantly. It's plain to see any life run on self. These three instincts can hardly be a success because we're always in collision with somebody or something. Yeah. The very thing that God gave us necessary for our survival are the very things that destroy us left on self. So remember, we're starting to see the difference between God's will and self-will. Absolutely fascinating. Now, I call these instincts the utilities of life. Just like this building. This, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have these utilities. Lights, heat, air conditioning, water. Got to have them to survive, right? Yeah, we all say that. But guess what? These utilities left unabated or left unattended would be the very same thing that would destroy this room. Flood it out. We got it somewhere. Yeah, that's why the ceiling tile's missing and all that. And you know what I'm talking about. So these instincts are the utilities of life. And here's the trap. Left on self-will, the fulfillment is so pleasurable, we can't keep from overdoing it. obviously. These basic instincts solve self-will, and here's where the magic or the pain comes. Under self, now that we know what it is, when we talk about self, we need to know what it is this arrow wrongs? Wrongs, according to this, is not a list of dirty, filthy, nasty things. Far from it, okay? The wrongs that we're talking about, obviously, are wrongs that come out of self. We found out a wrong is incorrect thinking. I'll be damned, that's what a resentment is. Feelings of bitter hurt or indignation which comes from rightly or wrongly held feelings of being injured or offended. That is a wrong that comes out of self. I'll be damned. Fear, incorrect believing. My fears, I find out, are feelings of anxiety, agitation, uneasiness, apprehension. And the next thing that comes out of self and the wrongs are incorrect actions. I take action sexually and otherwise. There's different types of wrongs, which obviously result in pain, hurt feelings, worry, financial loss, others. So that's what the wrongs that we're talking about. So you can see manifestations of a selfish, self-centered human being. And if you don't know these, you might want to write them down. Selfish, self-centered person is always madder than hell. Complaining, bitching, damn her, damn them. God's doing this, God's not doing that. They're doing this, I don't have this. Always, you know, you can spot them a mile away. You can spot them before they open their mouth. And then when they open their mouth, you really got it. Number two, they're scared to death. Reason being is they can't count on anybody or anything. You know where that comes from? Because they can't count on themselves. Selfish, self-centered people, always madder than hell. Scared to death. And I'm talking about the biggest, baddest, toughest mother you what? They are the most scared. They're the most scared. Because they come at you with that to try to... It don't work. It don't work anymore. Used to, but it don't work anymore. And the third thing of a selfish, self-centered, they're always saying or doing something to hurt somebody. Selfish, self-centered, that is the manifestations of a self-centered human being. Self-will, madder than hell, scared to death, always hurting somebody. And you know what I'm talking about, sobriety, untreated alcoholism. When we have these in ourselves, all of those things block you off from God and peace of mind. Oh, that's right, that's what we are going to inventory next week. When we start the inventory process, but I need to know where they come from and why they come. Okay? Now it's starting to make sense. If we can get off of self-will and operate on God's will and fulfill these three basic instincts at the level God intended, guess what? I ain't going to be in conflict with you, which means I'm not going to be in conflict with God, and I'm not going to be in conflict with myself. Wow. I get it. If all human beings on earth could live at these levels that God intended to be, chances are we wouldn't have any conflict in this world today and not an outside issue. Here's where it's coming from. This is why we need to know it. All human beings have self-will. All human beings overdo in these areas from time to time. All human beings from time to time are in conflict with other people, themselves, and with God because of these three basic instincts of life. Every emotional problem we have can be traced back to one of these three basic instincts of life. Give you an example. Believe it or not, the guy in jail for stealing, he's not in there because he's a thief. He's in there because one or all these instincts are out of whack. And remember, he's conning, he's manipulating, stealing, doing whatever he's got to do to fulfill that. That's the crux of the matter. It's not because he's a thief. It's because one or all these instincts are out of whack. And that's why he's doing that. So, self-will not only blocks you off from God, but other people, destroys any chance for peace of mind and happiness. And here's my personal experience. If my sole satisfaction of life is to satisfy these basic instincts, then I'm going to be unhappy all the time. Been there, done that. Okay? I need to be involved with something greater than self in order to be happy with you and with God and myself. So I need to have a understanding and a working knowledge of this for steps 3 and 4 so I can get on with it. So Let's see what the book says about it. So, it says, on that basis, what basis? Well, I'm running life on self. We know what it is. Now we're going to go. We're almost always in collision with somebody or something, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live on self-propulsion, self-will. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show, who is forever relying or trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery of the rest of his world in his own way. If his arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. Oh, wouldn't that be nice, okay? In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is most likely to have varied traits. What happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Here's the deal. I'm the director. I'm writing the script. I got one for my wife. I got one for my kids. I got one for my grandkids. I got one for my boss. And guess what? Not only do they don't read it, but they wouldn't follow it if they did. You know why? Because they've got their own script. They're writing their own thing. They got their own self. So guess what? Their script and mine don't meet. And guess what? Oh, that's right. The minute causes pain and suffering, and they retaliate. It's so plain to see. Any life run on self can hardly be a success because we're always in conflict with somebody or something. He goes on to say, what usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. Okay, and it says, treat himself right, he decides to exert himself more. He becomes more gracious. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding and gracious as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, which is obviously anger at unjust action, and self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Doesn't say drinking. Come on, y'all. It says, is he not really a self-seeker when trying to be kind? Is he not the victim of the delusion? We establish what that is, delusion, illusion, lie, insanity, not the truth. That he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well. And rest means pull, force, violently take by force. It's not evident to the rest of his players that these things that he wants are not his actions, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching they can get all out of the show? Is he not even the best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I bet you he is. Okay, here's the deal. Like I said, drawing about that script. And here's one of the biggest problems, personal observation, my time in Alcoholics Anonymous. In AA, is we're trying to make ourselves better people without God's help. Self-will cannot. Self-will cannot overcome self-will. We talked about it, but now it's really to the thing. He's going to talk about it. The satisfaction of these instincts of life are so strong, left on self, we will always overdo them. Sooner or later, just like drinking, ourselves, obviously, these desires for instincts, we have to have God's help. God made self-will, and only God has the power to overcome or change something he has made. Can't do it. Pouring self on self, I get sicker instead of getting better. Once again, I cannot solve a problem with a mind that created it. No matter how bad I want to. I'm going to make myself better, I swear to God. Okay? Can't heal a sick mind with a sick mind. We had to have God's help. Like I said, can't solve a problem, self, with a mind that created the problem, self. But I get it. So, this is what I'm going to say. Okay? So he goes on to say, our director is a self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays, he's like the retired businessman who lolls. That's somebody who's laying around in a lazy manner and lounging in the Florida sunshine in the winter of complaining of the sad state of the nation. We know a couple of those, don't we, Wayne? Okay. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia If the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him and the alcoholic who's lost it all and locked up, whatever our protestations are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self-pity? It's real simple. It's not. I just thought less of myself or more of myself. That's all that I thought about, period. So there you go. Okay. In other words, it's Johnny One Note, me, 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 me. And we find out what the trouble is, and much to our surprise, it's not drinking. And now we'll start getting into this R thing, recovery. Listen to what he says. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And yes, that's what this is. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our troubles. Didn't say drinking. Didn't say her, them, my lot in life, my color, my skin, all that. I'm not going to write that down. Selfish, self-centeredness, that's what all that is. Or should I? Does everybody get it? Selfishness, self-centeredness. I am going to write this one. This is what comes from that. We'll do that, huh? You mind if I step on you? You're all good. And all you spell checkers out there, centeredness, you know, that's what we're going to do. Okay. Now, come on, y'all. That's why I did that. What are these arrows? What are these arrows? 100. 100. 100. 100. Selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of what? I can write that one. I'll do that one. Well, look at that. Look at that crap. I don't know how to say it. Okay, selfishness, self-centeredness. Okay, driven by fear. Self-delusion. We're going to put just, uh-oh, self-D. Uh-oh, there's that self again. Self-delusion. Uh-oh. SS. Self-seeking. And, ooh, my favorite. So, ladies and gentlemen, we've gone from two. Any gardeners in here that got dandelions? You pull the top of that thing off. But you know what's underneath that? You've got 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking in that ground, and it's coming back. So here's the problem. It ain't alcohol. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our troubles. But guess what? From the root. And I love it. Here's what it is. We are driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that in some time in the past, we had made decisions based on what? Thank you. That's why we had to have that. I got to know what's driving me. Right here, self. I made decisions on one or all of these. And look what happens. Okay. Which later put us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, not our problems, we basically think of our own making. They arise out of our... Okay, they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, including alcohol. Not some things, not most things, not a lot of things. Above everything, we alcoholics must, not should, could, ought to, must be rid of this selfishness. We must, not should, could, ought to, or it kills us. Explanation point. Here's the hook, remember. God makes that possible. Not your sponsor, not your home group, not your psychiatrist, not your sponsor, not your girlfriend, not your boyfriend, not your mistress, not whatever you got, not your money, not your motorcycle, none of that. God makes that possible. I didn't say it, the book did. So here's what it is. When we talk about bondage of self, Here's where it is. 402 forms. Some people will say it says 100 forms. Is it 25 of this? 25, 100 forms. Thine own self be true. I guarantee you I got more than 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. 402 forms of a spiritually sick person. God makes that possible. I can't fix that. I created it. Self-created that. So he goes on to say, okay, God makes that possible, and there seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid, obviously. And it says, many of us have moral, philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them though we'd like to. And neither could we have reduced our self-centeredness by wishing or trying on our own power. I guess I said that, didn't I? Okay. Uh-oh. We had, not should, could, ought to, had to have God's help. Now, he told us how it worked. Now he's going to tell us why it won't work. This is the how and why of it. You might want to write this down. Remember, we haven't taken step three. We're at step three. Remember the pre-step steps? The requirements, what we have to do? Here's one of them. First of all, we had, not should, could, ought to, quit playing God. Can you imagine alcoholic playing God? I know how to play God. Guess what? Personal observation, I know we're time's premium. Whenever, I'm going to say it again, whenever anything in my life is not right, it's somehow, some way, I have been playing God again. And it happens again and again and again. Because I am driven by selfish self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. And I'm playing God. Give you an example real quick. He talks about our problems and our troubles are all making. When I am right, instincts, and life goes on. And something, an opportunity to grow comes. If I'm right with self, I'm right with God, the monkeys in the circus can go do what they're going to do. And I'm good with it. But when I'm looking at the monkeys, I say, you know what? They ought to be doing that. That opportunity to grow becomes a problem because I'm starting to play God. Then I attack that problem with self-will, and then it becomes trouble. Problems and troubles are my own making. Never, ever fails. That's the constant battle of this thing called recovery and alcoholism. So, it says it didn't work. It says next. So first we had to quit. Next we decided in the drama, in the hereafter, this drama of life. And any drama queens or kings in here? Okay, we are, all right. God was going to be our director, capital D, okay? He is the principal, and that's P-A-L, like the guy back in the day, and you youngins don't remember, but principals used to have a board, and they'd smack your ass if you got out of line, yeah. Yeah, principal, that means he's the main, everything, okay? So this is what we're doing. Still haven't taken the third step yet, y'all. Come on, okay? And we are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. This concept, what concept? We just got done everything from the third pertinent idea to there. This concept, okay, was the keystone of a new and triumphant arch which we passed to freedom, not from drinking. As corny as it is. One last handout for the night. It's so important that I understand this too. It talks about finally what he's talking about here is a keystone. Here's what we're building. It's an arch. Step one is willingness. Step two, the cornerstone. We talked about that last week. Step three, what he just talked about, this third step decision is the keystone. Now we find out in steps four and five, he tells us we add more stones. So what is it that we're building? We're building an arch to be a free man. Free from what? Selfish, self-centered, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. He's talking about the spiritual awakening, the spiritual experience. And the keystone in the arch, and they're still making them, believe it or not, is this top stone, and it is cut so that all the other stones of this arch lean on it. And you know what's weird about the keystone? the more weight you put on the thing, the stronger it becomes. So this decision is the keystone to freedom. Okay, now he goes on. He says, when we sincerely took such a position, what position? Everything that he's talked about. All sorts of remarkable things followed. Here are some of the greatest promises, y'all, and we haven't taken the step yet. Listen to what it says. We had a new employer. Here's who you're working for, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. If you ain't getting what you need, maybe you're not performing his work well and staying close to him. Okay? That's what the book says. Established on such footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. Okay. Our little plans and designs, more and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind, and we discovered we could face life successfully. Didn't say we were going to be success. We could face life successfully. Good times, bad times, happy times, sickness, money problems, good, you know, all the things. Life. We could face life successfully. Why? Because we have the power coming up. Now listen to what it says, okay? And it says, we can face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, hereafter. We were reborn. Powerful. Remember Silkworth said, recreate our life? He just got done saying, we are reborn. And no, that's not going back in the womb and coming out again. That's renewing of the mind. Spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, Appendix 2. Listen to what he says. After we've done this, first, next, and all these things, we were now at step 3. Haven't done it, so now we are. Many of us said to our makers that we understood him. Famous third step prayer. And we're going to say it, and obviously there's a prayer or multiple prayers with every step from now till 12. Famous third step prayer. Quote, God, I offer myself to thee. Okay, so, all right, let's stop right here. I'm going to be the devil's advocate. Just because I offer myself to him, is he going to take it? No. Now, I'm going to say something. If I'm going to offer something to anybody that I hold in any esteem at all, especially that God feller, don't you think I want to clean it up before I offer that? I mean, sit down and listen to these words and how they mean to you. And that's what I'm saying. This is more than an arbitrary decision. Am I going to write on a black marker or a blue marker? This is life-changing stuff. So I'm going to offer myself to thee, and I'm going to clean it up. Is it going to take me or not? That's not my choice. I'm offering. Okay, now this is what he says. To do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of bondage of self. What is it? Right there, 402 things. That's bondage of self. If you got that, I guarantee you, you are the biggest slave in the world, and you got the worst and the cruelest master called self. Makes alcohol look like nothing. And you'll find out what we're talking about when we get into the life-changing steps of step 6 and 7 when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of self. But he goes on to say that. Relieve me of bondage of self, that I might better do thy thinking, not mine. Take away my difficulties. What are my difficulties? Well, we just listed 402 of them, and yeah, it could be the my life is in, I don't have a driver's license, I don't have a job, those are difficulties. But I made them that way. Okay? Why do I want those? So I can have an easy time? No. That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. That's why God's taking them away, so I can be witness to you. Whatever I've been through is to help you, not for me. It ain't about me. It's about thee and you. That's what this is about. The beginning of that. So he goes on to say, may I do thy will always. Not some of the time, not most of the time, not a lot of time. Okay? And it says, we thought well before taking this step. Not working this step, by the way. Making sure that we were ready. Ready for what? Ready for the precepts and then what this prayer says. That's what we're ready for. Okay? That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Oh, I get it. So he does. He wants a lot more than just the drinking. So now, self-will. Like I said, obviously, has blocked everything off. So, when we're reborn, renewing the mind, so just think, if God can direct my thinking in all areas, then I probably could get a better chance of being healthier in all areas, not just drinking. So, now what it says, utterly to him without reservation, okay? And then it goes on to say, listen to this. Listen to how he says, thought well, we were ready, utterly, without reservation, and goes on to say this, okay? Here's some suggestions. We found it desirable to take this spiritual, not religious, spiritual step with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, spiritual advisor, but it is better to meet God alone than one who might misunderstand. The wording, of course, was quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. Okay? So now, y'all that I sponsor, and you know how we've done this before, we do it formally on our knees, by the way, you guys, and if even if you have bad knees, you're still going to get down with me. And we do it formally, and then we do it from our heart. All of those things that we talked about, then you say the third step prayer from your heart. This is a good prayer out of the book, and we broke it down. We broke it down at length, but there's a different layer and level, and then we say it from our heart. All as it's directed. That's what he's talking about with that. So it goes on to say, this was only a beginning. Uh-oh, I thought I could really rest. No. And this is what I tell them when they go there. Though if honestly and humbly made. That's why we're on our knees, fellas. Something about when I pray to God on my knees, the body, my body position matches my heart. Any prayer is a good prayer. Standing up, driving, whatever. I'm not saying that. For me, when I'm on my knees, humbly before my Creator and all the things that we talked about, God, He's there and He comes in strong and hot and heavy. And it says, humbly made, an effect sometimes a very great one was felt at once. Now and then, you may have a spiritual experience, quick, sudden, like Bill had. As a rule, most of us don't. Don't freak out. Because it's a coming. It may be the educational variety, but it is coming. So there's a lot of power. So, I suggest we do the third step with someone else. And here's the magic of it. Because it's long known that prayer taken in connection with another human being has much deeper meaning. When we go down on our knees together and pray the prayer from the heart, out of the book, in our heart, when we started, there were two of us. When we get up, there's one, because we're bound like that, and that bind even gets tighter if you end up doing a fifth step with that guy or gal, whoever you're doing it. And I guarantee you, you will be closer with those people than some of your own blood relatives. That has been my experience. If you haven't, please do so, and I believe you will feel the same. So anyhow, it has much deeper meaning and a deeper effect than taking alone. That's why, going back to the Oxford group, they made you do a surrender in company with another human being. And here's why, and we will talk about it. Please stay tuned. We'll come back and expound on this. All human beings are born to live in three dimensions. If God lives within us, which He does, and we establish that, we're born to live with God. Since we live on earth, that means we're born to live with other human beings. If we can take this prayer with another human being for the first time, for a lot of us, or the first time in a long time, we're trying to reassemble ourselves in the design that God intended when these instincts are in check. In other words, with God and other human beings, and obviously, here's the last food for thought. And the reason that I've been doing it, I've been harping on you guys tonight that I sponsor, because I'm really taking it to task this year for a couple reasons. I know that you've done it both ways in there, in the, out of the formal prayer and then out of our heart. I know you've done it. And yes, talking about selfish, self-centered. And guess what? I get to be the recipient because I am with you saying it. And it is no longer I, it is we that are doing it. And then it takes those words in this book, that one word, we, and it takes it to a new and different level than I've never had before. Never, ever fails and becomes stronger, stronger part of my life. So now you can see with the information that we have, this is a no-brainer decision. But I will caution, and I caution all the guys that do this, because when we make this decision and do the precept steps and do everything that it is, you'd better have your paper, you better have your pen, you better have your willingness, and you better have your big boy pants on too. So yeah. Because we ain't going to be doing a hurt feelings report. No, that's not what it's about. We're going to get down to the fact of the matter. And it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, which is the first step, or the fourth step, okay? And it tells us that we do it at once. And that's within reason. We're not going to say after we're done doing that, but we're not waiting a year, we're not waiting whatever. At once is pretty close to it. So, before we do this together, and before maybe you do it with your sponsor, however you're going to do it, maybe you want to come back next week and find out what you're prepared to, because once you do this third step, my experience has been you've got to strike when the iron's hot, because if you wait to do that, it's going to cool off, and guess what? The enemy's going to come back.
Yes.
Who's the enemy? Oh, self. That's right. We'll talk about that next week. How about if we close with the Lord's Prayer? Serenity prayer from our hearts instead of saying it from our heads. We invite all of us to go to that quiet place where we can pray our treasured serenity prayer, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And of course, we've been saying this prayer, and it comes extra alive tonight. It's the set-aside prayer because we're going into an area of recovery tonight of inventory, and I guarantee you, if you're going to get better, you will need an open mind when we do this. And it's amazing what God can and will do. But anyhow, this set-aside prayer is a thing, and it doesn't matter where you're at in this journey of recovery, because a lot of us come here with preconceived ideas and what we think we know and so on and so forth. And obviously that can be a liability and not an asset, because if I come here with all the answers and no questions, I'm screwed because I can't learn anything. I knew it all. And this obviously, I know enough about AA in this book to be dangerous to myself. So we ask God to open our minds, our hearts, and our souls to give us what we need to hear tonight. And this goes as follows. God, please help me today set aside everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about my disease, everything I think I know about these steps, and everything I think I know about you. For an open mind and a new experience, that E word, with myself, with my disease, these steps, and especially you. And the ones that haven't been here, where you landed, it's called Nutt's Big Book Study, and that is not using the steps, and it's not a study, it's an experience. If you do the deal, you will experience that. And what we tried to do is get you from nut to a slut, and don't freak out. That stands for sober living using the steps. So we have a process of doing that. We have taken something from this book, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, which we will refer to occasionally. But what we've got out of this is an introductory paragraph or our mission statement or our mantra or our goal. And it goes as follows. AA's 12 Steps. A group of principles, spiritual in nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink, enable the sufferer to be happily and usefully whole. We call that a recovered alcoholic, emotional sobriety, spiritual sobriety. Appendix 2 uses 13 different words to mean this one thing. Change. And it's not something when you get a dollar bill and you change it into coin. Change. And that's what we're trying to put ourselves in the position of doing through this book. And then God does the work and changes us. So I believe we are out of that part of it. Now, you will see on the board tonight some interesting things. You see this word resentment, and obviously that's the first part of the inventory. We will go into what this word means in depth in a little bit. You'll see the word moral. We will explain what that is, and he uses that twice. The word inventory, and we must know what it is. We use the word paper, and you'll see the 1, 2, 3. I suppose that's the number of times he tells us that we got to have it on paper. In the list, oh my God, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 times. And it tells us it's written, and then we have the difference between the decision and a commitment. Absolutely fascinating. And then, of course, a sample of the inventory that's in the book. Now, last week we talked in a general way on how it works. And remember, we did the original manuscript on how it was. It was very, very important to do that. Tonight we will go out of the famous How It Works chapter 5. But needless to say, much to your surprise, we're going to take a look at a couple of the words. Maybe from a different angle, because so many times you hear that. If you go to enough meetings, you can become jaded, and it can go right in and right out. Before we do that, though, I want to give you something that's going to be a precursor for tonight, and it's called How to Be Unhappy. So you might want to write this down. Listen to it. It's power. Sit down quietly where you are not likely to be disturbed. Relax the body and begin to think about yourself. Every time your thought wanders to something higher, bring it back gently but relentlessly. Think about the past. Think about all the mistakes you have made, going right back to childhood. Think of all the opportunities you have missed and the time you have wasted. Especially think of all the occasions upon which you were badly treated. Think about your body and wonder if your age or job or the climate isn't beginning to tell. See if you cannot discover a pain or an ache somewhere. Think about finances, and if they're going well now, insist that they probably will be too good to last. In any case, think about yourself. That is the main point. And if you will keep this up faithfully for 15 or 20 minutes, there can be no doubt of the result. And obviously, we know about that is how to be unhappy, and this is what we're talking about. So, we are going to read something, and I've always been talked about this, is something that Bill wrote. He wrote this, actually, is in two things. He wrote a letter in 1954, and then he wrote this in a portion of this book, The 12 and 12, and it's called Righteousness Indignation. And that is, indignation is feeling or expressing anger, especially at unjust or mean action. And Bill goes on to say, the positive value of righteousness indignation is theoretical, especially for alcoholics. It leaves every one of us to open to the rationalization that we may be as angry as we like, provided we can claim to be righteous about it. Nothing worse than an alcoholic with a cause, by the way. Anyhow, we'll talk about that later. It's a different thing. But here's the magic about this. He says, when we harbored grudges and planned revenge for defeats, we were really beating ourselves with a club of anger we had intended to use on others. We learned that if we were seriously disturbed, our very first need was to quiet that disturbance, regardless of who or what we thought caused it. So we find out later on with these resentments, we were talking about it today at the house, I take the poison and wait for you to die. It don't work, or I'll show you, I'll kill me. Absolutely fascinating that we have that. Now, we're going to go ahead and read how it works, and then we will start with the four step. Maybe you want to go along with this, or maybe you want to not, maybe just listen to it. Anyhow, how it works. Chapter 5, the famous chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. What is the path? We've established that the path is these 12 steps. Those who do not recover, not quit drinking, recover, are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. These steps are simple. Not easy, simple. He talks about that many, many times. Okay. Usually, but not always. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. The word seem. Remember in earlier in the book, he says, outward appearances don't equal inward reality. It seems to be that way, but it may not. A lot of power in those first couple sentences is what we're talking about rarely. We're talking about those who fail, obviously people who don't recover and drink again. Talks about completely in the simple program. And it says, they are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living. Not talking, not thinking, not reading, not philosophy, which demands rigorous honesty. Just because it demands it, don't freak out because you're not going to be able to give it. We are flawed, we are broken. But it demands, okay, a manner of living, okay? Now, it goes on to say, their chances are less than average. Stop. What is the average? Well, we established that a long time ago in the second foreword when he said 50% recovered at once and another 25. The average was 75% when this got to print. Remember, we verified that with that first edition printing I've got, printing number 16, appendix in the back, he said 66%. So the average they're talking about is not today's average of the 4 and 5 or 9%, whatever you want to call it. We're talking about the average when this came to print. Less than average, okay? So you got to remember when this was written and what averages they're talking about. Okay, and it says, there are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. I got news for you. If you're a real alcoholic, you're suffering from a grave mental emotional disorder. I got it, because obviously I'm insane. Remember we're talking about that? Remember part of the mind isn't there? I've got a grave mental emotional disorder. If you're a real alcoholic, I suggest you got that. You might have multiple, but that's for you to discover. But many of them do recover. Not drink, we're talking recover, if they have the capacity to be honest. Next one is probably one of the most misused sentences behind the podium. When people say I'm supposed to say what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, I don't know what book they're reading. I don't know what program they're in. It doesn't say that. It says, our stories disclosed in a general way. Don't want to hear a fist step behind the podium, by the way. What we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. I suppose that backs up what we did last week when we talk about selfishness, self-centered, is the root of our trouble, driven by 100 forms, and we find out that we are the problem and not it. That's what alcoholism is we, not it. And it goes on to say, if, yeah, big qualifying word, you've decided you want what we have. You need to stop. What do we have? You got a case of the ass? Is that what I heard somebody say? Yeah, okay. Yeah. What we have is a program of recovery. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got, a recovered alcoholic. What are we offering people coming in? Go to some meetings. If that's what you got, I'll go back to the bar and I'll get better. I hate to say it, but it's true. Some of the language, some of the stuff, and some of what I've heard, whatever. If you did that in front of my wife or my children when they're growing up, my grandchildren, we're going to have some serious things going on. Like I said, if I want that kind of stuff, I'll take them to a bar. Not in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what do we have? Okay? It says, if you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it. Here's the magic. When people direct and have the audacity to give a timeline on frames of when you take the steps, it says then. It doesn't say tomorrow. It doesn't say the next month, next week, next year. Then. Then you are ready to take certain steps. Oh, yeah, we're going to what those are. And there is a timeline on these steps. He just got done telling you what it is. Okay? It says, at some of these, obviously, the steps, we balked. Come on, baseball's coming up. You know what a balk is? The pitcher's on the mound. What does he do? He makes a move towards home plate, but he stops and throws it to first. That's a balk. I mean, when you balk is when you start something and you don't complete it. And guess what? You're in for big trouble. He's going to tell you. So that's what he's talking about, balk. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnest at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. So we're really getting down to it. We're talking about rarely, completely, thoroughly, beg, all the earnestness, okay? Fearless, thorough. This is what he says. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas. We talked about that. How many times you use that word prejudice? Old ideas that are incorrect. Mostly about God we're talking about there. And the result was nil. That means nothing. It doesn't mean you get half, a quarter, a third. The result was nil until what? Until we let go absolutely. You can see there's some power. We're talking about some big directions, not suggestions, okay? Remember that we deal with alcohol. I suppose that's why the name of this book is called Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't say alcohol and donuts. It doesn't say alcohol and gambling. It doesn't say alcohol and football, Harley's, sex, whatever. It says, remember that we deal with alcohol. That's why there's 444 other fellowships that have borrowed our 12 steps. And we've allowed them. We've signed off on it. New York says, have at it. That's why, because we deal with alcohol. What is it? Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one, capital O, remember when we said that, whenever there's a capital on there, that's referring to God. There is one, not two, not three, not four, the one who has all power, not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, all power. So let me see, if there's one, and he or she or it, whatever, has got all the power, and I'm powerless, I better hook up, or else I'm screwed. Yeah, okay, all right. That one, no guesswork, that one is your sponsor, no. That one is your home group, no. Your therapist, your psychiatrist, your wife, your mistress, your husband, your boyfriend. That one is God, period. Okay, now listen, y'all. It says, may you find him now.